scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
First of all, look who's back, everybody. Happy Monday. It is the final week of October. It's Monday, October 28th. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. And after a 17-week layoff, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media returns to Flames Talk.
Hey. Has it only been 17?
You know what? It's only been 2 weeks, but it felt like 2 years. Good to have you back.
It's good to be back, buddy.
And you've missed a lot. No, it's been a fun last couple weeks. So Vix and I have had plenty to talk about. This team has given us plenty to talk about, and now something new for this season, and that something new is the Flames have lost consecutive games for the first time this season. And
never happened when I was on Flames Talk.
That's a fair point. Now, are you putting that on Vicker's shoulders? Is it my fault? Like, you tell me. You have time to think about that.
Yeah, let me think about that for a few minutes.
We got lots to talk about this hour on the program. Text line's open at 960-960. Flames Talk's available wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and more. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Inevitably, we're now seeing a lot of the told you they'd come back down to earth and, you know, those types of I told you so, they're not this good. We've just been waiting for this to happen. And that's only in some circles. And maybe that is exactly what's happening. Maybe the Flames are coming back down to earth. I'm just not convinced one way or the other as of yet. It's only been two games after a 5-0-1 start. And there have been plenty of positives in those two games as well. It's not like you came away from either of the Carolina or Winnipeg losses, specifically Saturday more so than Thursday, because there was a 15-16-minute stretch on Thursday against the Canes where you'd say something like, oh, geez, the Flames, they look significantly like the second-best team on the ice for an extended stretch of time. Now, they adjusted. Unfortunately, by the time they adjusted, it was three-rip Hurricanes. Whereas Saturday against the unbeaten Jets, who remain unbeaten at 8-for-8, you know, it never really felt like that the game was dominated by one side of the other. And the Flames, I thought, were right there with the group all night long, and it just ended up a power play goal late, a somewhat controversial power play goal, depending on who you ask, ends up deciding the game, and they lose by a final score of 5-3. But for the most part, Wes, even in these last two games, there's been plenty to sink your teeth into from a positive standpoint. So I'm curious where the text line is, 960, 960. What's your feel? Are we seeing cracks in the armor? Is this team coming back to earth, or are you still feeling pretty positive about what is now a 5-2-1 start to the season? But what about you?
I think that this is a stage in these past two games where you could sort of spin it for whichever direction you wanted. If you were on team, hey, I told you they couldn't keep this up, I told you they're not as good as their record, there are things that you can look at in these past two games. There is cause for concern in a couple of areas. And I also think if you're on team, hey, they can keep this rolling, that what I see is sustainable, maybe not at a 900-point clip, but if you're on that side, I think there's lots of evidence of it as well. Like, even just you point to sort of the resilience and the ability to pull themselves out of those funks in games where maybe things weren't going their way, or the ice was suddenly tilted. I think of both these past two games, there would have been moments where it looked like the other team kind of had the snowball rolling downhill. And I think the Calgary Flames deserve a lot of credit for making sure that it didn't become that runaway snowball. And so I think you can look at it either way. You know, if you want to look at the negative side, one thing that we talked about a lot going into this season was, okay, how is this group going to score goals? How are they going to collectively produce offense? You know, if there's something that might be keeping Craig Conroy or Ryan Huska awake at night over these past few games. It's hints that the offense could be drying up a little. That it was never going to come in the sort of bursts that it did in the first few games. That, you know, they weren't going to continue being a team that scored six a night. But I think that's something that could be concerning. You know, if you are worried about whether scoring by committee would work, I think you can look at these last, even these last four games, really, and say, okay, you know, I'm starting to worry a little bit about that. But by and large, buddy, I see a lot of positives. You know, I see a group that had an opportunity on Saturday against the best team in the league, or the lone undefeated team in the league, to really make a statement. Hey, if you're not taking us seriously yet, kind of watch this.
Yeah.
And I thought, for the most part, they took advantage.
And, you know, I look at the two losses, and then I look at the six games prior where they were 5-0-1, and I still see a lot of constants in terms of that work ethic. I still see a lot of constants in terms of the compete level, and those types of things. And that's why I'm not quite ready to say, oh, yep, you know what, all those I told you so people are right, because that work ethic and that compete level is what was the primary driving force on the 5-0-1 start, and was still there in a couple of losses. And it's not like, you know, there are certain teams over the course of you know, a season where, yeah, they might work their tails off. Like, you take a look at Chicago last year. Chicago worked for Luke Richardson, and that was never really an issue, but they just weren't good enough. They so many times they worked their asses off, but they're like, yeah, like, the other team's just way better than you, and if they come even close to matching your work ethic, they're going to beat you most nights, right? And I haven't got that feel in the two losses for Calgary, that they worked hard, but you know what? The other team didn't break a sweat, and they matched the work ethic and were able to win fairly going away. Like, they were essentially both one-goal games, even though there were empty netters in both of them. And so Carolina, I look at as a borderline elite team. Winnipeg, I'm still like, hey, there ain't no, you can't take that away from them. I still don't know if I'm in the Stanley Cup contender Winnipeg Jets boat yet, but they're still unbeaten, and they're finding ways to win, which they did again on Saturday. But again, they match Calgary's work ethic, but they didn't blow the Flames away. So yeah. I guess because of the fact that we still saw that work ethic central in what the Flames are doing, and they were pretty close in both games, that actually leads me more towards the optimism side than maybe the pessimism side.
Yeah, and it's not just the work ethic as much, and the two certainly dovetail, so maybe I'll just be repeating you after all, but you know, the other part of it for me is the buy-in. Like, this is a Flames group that certainly understands what their recipe has to be. And I do think that they've done a pretty good job of almost never straying away from that. Like, we haven't seen a team that starts 5-0-1 and says, okay, watch this, boys. Time to stalk the highlight reel. We're gonna play a different game because look how good we are. I don't see a team that, to their credit, ever believed they were going to be as awful as many predicted they were. And I also don't see a team now that is sort of reading their own press clippings. And I know, you know, you mentioned sort of jury still out on the Winnipeg Jets. Hey, lots of people are going to say that about this Flames team. You know, where is this team finish? What does this hot start ultimately turn into? I think very much the jury is still out on that, and yet you're right. If you're looking for reasons to for optimism, if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic, you don't have to work too hard. You don't have to squint to find something to feel good about. And we thought 8 games in the season, you might need to.
And goaltending would be the other thing that I would point to that's been central.
Yeah,
Dan Vladar was just fine against Carolina. Dustin Wolf was great against Winnipeg, despite the puck off his back on the 3-2 goal early in the third period. But I mean, like,
Even the way he responds to that, though, I think you learn something from, don't you?
Yeah. And I come away from four starts for Dan Vladar, four starts for Dustin Wolf. Vladar's going to get his fifth Monday night in Vegas. You'd assume that it'll be Wolf Wednesday night in Utah's. There's no really reason right now to end the goalie rotation, something we'll talk about a little bit later on the roundtable this hour. But again, like, you're getting good goaltending. That's a reason for optimism. You're getting some good performances from different spots in the lineup. You're not seeing a group ever wave the white flag, whether they're down 3-0 to a high-end smothering Hurricanes team or not, whether they get bad break after bad break against the Jets on Saturday. Like, we have yet to see this group wave a white flag. I don't know, man. I'm not quite ready to say, like, oh, yeah, bubbles burst. They're no good. You know what? All you people who said they were going to finish 31, you're right. I'm just not there yet.
I don't think you should be saying that. I don't think anybody should be saying that. Quite frankly, if you thought the Flames were going to finish 31st, and I know, Pat, both you and I have been banging this drum for a while, but you know, you might need to,
it's not bad
you
enough,
might need
right?
to loop back on some rosters around the league. You might need to look at the San Jose Sharks lineup on any given night or some of these other groups around the league. I just, you mentioned goaltending. That's something, how do I want to put this? The Calgary Flames aren't good enough to outscore bad goals against. I think we know that. And so the goaltending is going to be something that has to maintain at a high level for them to continue to have success. This is not a team that is going to be able to outscore bad goaltending or bad defensive play. And yet when I talk about the buy-in, I think they get that. I think they understand that they can't play fire wagon hockey against top opponents, that they can't give up the sort of high danger chances that a more run and gun team would, that they're going to have to be a team that focuses on puck retrievals and forecheck and all that. And yet what we've seen through eight games is they're still a damn fun team to watch, mm-hmm. right? You haven't been cheated on entertainment value. And so I give them a lot of credit so far. And yeah, if you know, as I said earlier, if you're looking for something to be pessimistic about, you could sit at home and watch power play clips and say, see, I told you that the shine was going to come off this group, but I think it's too early for that. I really do think that we've still seen a lot of positives.
Yeah, and this is a tough stretch for Calgary. Mm-hmm. You know, and Vix and I kind of talked about it last week when they had Carolina coming in on the Thursday. You thought to yourself, okay, Carolina followed by unbeaten Winnipeg, followed by Vegas, where they've actually had decent success at T-Mobile Arena over the last little while, 2-0-1 in their last three trips, but prior to that, 0-8
right.
in their first few years.
And then Vegas is 6-0 at home this season.
And Vegas is sitting on top of the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
Then you've got a Utah group that is playing teams hard, and that atmosphere and their home ice has been a real interesting story. And then you've got Jacob Markstrom in New Jersey in here on Friday, the Oilers in here on Sunday. So it's kind of like you take a look at this 6-game gauntlet. You're like, yeah, this is a tough little stretch for them.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they going to do with it? And I know that they have started with a couple of regulation losses, but it's not because they've played awful. It's not because they've just, you know, everything that we had seen in the first 5-6 games completely went by the wayside. They're still playing the same way and coming up just a little short, not a significant amount of the way short.
Yeah, and I think it does underscore the importance of these next two games in the sense of you can't continue to have the close but no cigars pile up and still say, hey, you know, everyone's taking us lightly. You can't be a team that periodically plays just well enough to almost win, but you know, let's not overgeneralize. If you had asked anyone in that room, if you'd asked anyone in the city a few weeks ago how they'd feel about a 5-2-1 start,
we
could overreact to back-to-back regulation losses, and even though they came against good teams and even though they were two goal losses, but that number was skewed by an empty netter. Like you could overreact to a couple of regulation losses, but I go back to what I was saying earlier. If you offered 5-2-1 to quite frankly, any team in the NHL through eight games, they're all taking it.
A few texts at 960-960. Shub says, welcome back, Wes. Still super positive with this team. Goalies look good. Lots of surprise performances from some of the new names for a team that was projected to be bottom five. They sure are giving us some entertaining hockey. This reads, I'm still positive. Just need to dial in the consistency. Playoffs, here we come. Kim says, I'm feeling quite certain the bubble has burst. What we've seen from the Flames so far has been fun and exciting, but I'm afraid they may be a sub-500 team. That comes from Kim in Crestmont. So Kim feeling like the bubble has burst a little bit. This from our boy Dylan. Team looks the same. The other teams are just getting their feet and structure under them. It is what it is. It's good to see the refs giving. I won't even read that part. We'll get to Nazem Kadri in a little bit, but I won't read the sarcastic part of Dylan's text. This says the Flames were by far the better team in the third period until Pospisil took his penalty. By far the better team. The only team that has been clearly better to my eyes this season was Carolina. Sure, once the Canes were up 3-0, the Flames made a push and made it close, but Carolina had clearly taken their foot off the gas. But versus the Jets, I think the Flames were the better team and deserved some points. This reads, and that's just a little bit of the text response to whether or not the bubble has burst or they've come back down to earth or there are some holes in the armor, whatever the whatever term you want to use. Just a little reaction on the text line at 960-960. I have to censor on the fly, by the way. I'm like, no, that's not, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, so I won't read that. But yes, this is some of the on-topic text we've got so far.
Let's hit really quick on something that just came up there. Are we concerned, and when I say are we concerned, should the Flames be concerned about Martin Pospisil's lack of discipline?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think we should not be surprised that Pospisil is still learning the balance that he needs to walk at the NHL level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember, we're still talking about a guy who is less than a full season in the NHL under his belt.
Right.
And he's already developed a reputation with officials. Like, you don't, there's not a lot of guys that develop a reputation with NHL officials as quickly as Pospisil did. And so I think it then becomes a very interesting challenge in terms of how you do walk that line. And, you know, some of his penalties have been frustrating, like the tripping call that maybe turned the momentum a little bit, that helped give Winnipeg that 5-on-3. So
especially because let's call it what it was. It's a slew foot.
Yeah, it was a silly penalty to take.
It was called tripping on the ice, and so I don't mean that as a, hey, I'm calling out Pat here, but that, you know, that's the sort of thing you're just not getting away with. And that's where you sort of cross the line from playing hard to just not playing very smart. And yeah. So I only ask if it should be a concern for the Flames because it comes on the heels of the benching against the Pittsburgh Penguins based on Ryan Huska telling reporters post-game, hey, you know, I'm okay with the sort of aggressive penalties that Pospisil is going to take because that comes part and parcel with the style of hockey that we want him to play. I don't want to see the lazy penalties. And yep. Then for Pospisil, and I wouldn't call the slew foot lazy on Saturday, but for Pospisil, just a couple of games later to cost his team or potentially cost his team the way he did. They didn't score on that 5-on-3 as it ended up, but you know, he puts his team in a really tough spot. The momentum, as one of the texters pointed out, really starts to turn at that moment. And so I am curious about it. I sometimes get emails from writers in Slovakia who want to ask me, what are you seeing with him?
Yeah.
And I received one a few days ago. And one of the questions that I was asked was, well, you know, what do you think of him being benched against the Penguins? Is it a concern? And, you know, when I wrote back, one of the things I told him was, you know, I think he deserves actually a lot of credit for the way his game has matured, the way he's been able to play an aggressive, albeit less aggressive than maybe we saw last season style, while avoiding the penalty box. But I did not think Saturday was a good example of that.
So I do want to also talk about the other penalty that was called in the third
period. Was there another one?
Well, yeah, Rasmus Anderson's tripping penalty as well. That gave Winnipeg a 90-second 5-on-3, which ended up being killed off very nicely by the Flames. But no, the Nazem Kadri penalty is the one I'm talking about. The slashing call a few minutes after they killed off the 5-on-3, which eventually helped lead to the Cole Perfetti game-winning goal in a 5-3 win. It was a 3-3 tie at that point. And this is what, as Kadri said, oh, could you pick up on the fact that I wasn't very happy about it? This is just a little bit of what number 91 had to say post-game on Saturday.
What are you going to do? I mean, it's a great game. We had a great game on our hands. Very unfortunate. That's what I had to come down to. You know, I feel like you got to have some feel for the game. And, you know, that's certainly, especially when they're coming off a 5-on-3, to have that one called is upsetting, yeah.
Right before that happens, you are feeling probably pretty good as a team, killing that, and then you got the momentum.
I think both teams were playing great. It was tremendous hockey out there. It was just a toe-to-toe battle. And, you know, someone had a little too much decision on the game.
In what way do you feel like the game was kind of taken from you guys? Like, is that a little bit of sentiment right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's pretty natural to feel that way. I mean, both teams are fighting hard, you know, scraping for every inch out there. And, you know, obviously to have that not go in your favor and just, you know, not let the players decide, essentially, is, you know, it's frustrating. Yeah, for sure.
So that was Nazem postgame on Saturday. I just want to say a few things and then I'm curious to your reaction on it. Number one, I thought it was a borderline call. I thought it was, I get it as a fan. You're in a 3-3 fun hockey game and a guy gets mostly stick. Like if you watch that replay, it's like 90% stick and maybe 10% hands. If that he gets on Neil Pionk behind the net. So I get it. You're like, geez, that's a borderline call in a 3-3 game in the final 5 minutes. You're like, I don't like that. And then inevitably Jet score as Perfetti goes upstairs and that ends up being the game winner. Like I get the frustration. I don't think it is as egregious as it's been made out in some spots. Like, no, I don't think Gary Bettman called the officials and said, get the Jets a penalty. I don't think the two of the smallest markets in the NHL. I don't think Gary Bettman is really worried too much about game management at that point. But yeah, I thought it was a borderline call. I fully understand the frustration about that call being made at that point. I think in fairness to the officials in real time, you know, you see a stick getting on the hands and you're trying to call things consistently the entire way through. I guess I can see why you raise the arm, but I would have been far more pleased if the arm didn't go up there and a game doesn't get decided by that. But I don't think it's as egregiously bad a call as perhaps it's being made out in some circles. I also think that the whole idea, like there's been a lot of, and I get sometimes, well, I don't get, sometimes I think Nazem Kadri takes more heat and I think the reasons for it are straight garbage, but I don't think it's fair to be talking about Nazem Kadri being undisciplined, nor do I think it makes a whole lot of sense to be criticizing Nazem for his reaction to the said call. Because here's what I'd say about what we just heard from Kadri and what we saw from Kadri on the ice on Saturday night. Nazem Kadri is a first-round pick, Stanley Cup winner, a guy to surely play 1,200 games in the NHL when it's all said and done, for a number of different reasons. His hockey sense, his two-way play, his underrated skill, his leadership, and you know what else? Also because he wears his heart on his sleeve. Also because one of the biggest driving forces of Nazem Kadri throughout his career has been his emotion. And emotion that he has, as any human being does, reined in because you just get more mature as a person throughout the years. He's not doing throat slash gestures on the ice anymore. He's not getting himself suspended in playoff games or playoff series against the Boston Bruins anymore. He's taking goaltender, idiot goaltenders throwing water bottles at him in stride. He's taken racist BS that is thrown at him in that St. Louis series a number of years ago in stride. Like, he is, and he'll be the first to tell you, he's matured in significant ways. So, like, when a guy who is driven by his emotion gets a little emotional in a really kind of playoff field 3-3 game in the third period, I'm not going to criticize him, nor am I going to criticize him if he talks about it, especially after we criticize pro athletes in 2024 for never saying anything. And then he comes out and says something and we're like, damn, that's some really good stuff. I'm not going to criticize him for it. I don't think he showed a lack of discipline. I do understand his frustration. And a guy who is driven by the fact that he does wear his heart on his sleeve and has since he was drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs in 2008 or whenever it was, I'm not going to then just criticize the guy for being authentic to who he is. So I had no problem with the with Nazem's reaction. I understand the frustration on the penalty, and I wish it wasn't called, but it happens. It'll happen in for every team, every season, for the rest of time, at least once, if not multiple times, over 82 games. Do I get the frustration from Kadri? Yep. Do I get the frustration from a Flames fan? Yep. But you lose the game, you move on, and it'll probably happen again between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I certainly am not going to criticize Nazem Kadri for what I thought was a very sort of measured reaction in his post-game scrum. You know, whatever he said to the referee on the ice, he certainly dialed it back post-game. I thought not only did it sound like he was making sure he wasn't going to be fined, but, you know, I thought they were strong comments without being comments that were going to get him in hot water with the league. I also understand the frustration, and yet I also understand why that penalty's called there. I mean, if he gets more than 90% stick or whatever number we think it was, you know, the reaction to a slash on the hands as a guy is carrying the puck around his own net in a 3-3 game is that if that slash forces a turnover and we're not calling it and it winds up in the back of the net, then we're getting hell from the other team, right? And if that was Rasmus Andersson carrying the puck around the back of the Flames net and he gets slashed on the hands and coughs it up and it's 4-3, then we're having a much different conversation, but we're still talking about it today. And so I thought it was, I think, borderline, you said.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good word for it. And yet I do think Nazem Kadri puts the official in a spot there where we're not talking about a phantom call. We're just talking about one that could have gone either way in a 3-3 game. Now, you know,
that's a really good way of putting it. Like, it wasn't a slash. Yeah, exactly.
And now, is there some lingering frustration from Connor Zary losing half a tooth and not getting a high sticking call, whatever, earlier in the game? Sure, there's some lingering frustration with that. Is Nazem Kadri extra frustrated because the Winnipeg Jets capitalize and Cole Perfetti scores the game winner on that power play? Well, of course that ratchets up the frustration level, but I'm with you. Like, I don't really criticize. I shouldn't say I don't really. I completely don't criticize Nazem Kadri for the way he handled it, both in the moment and afterwards, but you know, I'm also not going to bang the table and say, somebody take that guy's whistle away, because I understand why the penalty was called.
Yeah. So there you have it. Just wanted to address that very quickly. And now the Flames get set to take on the Vegas Golden Knights Monday night in game 999 for the captain, Michael Backlund. You can bet lots of 1,000 game talk for surrounding Michael. You'll hear lots of that on Tuesday and Wednesday's editions of Flames Talk. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you this hour on Flames Talk, and we are coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Happy Monday, and it is time for a Monday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport at Steinberg, West Gilbertson. And now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And as the Flames get set for a game Monday night against the Vegas Golden Knights, Dan Vladar gets the start, which means 9 games in, we are 9-for-9 on this goalie rotation. Vladar getting set for his 5th start of the season, which means almost certainly you'd go Dustin Wolf Wednesday in Utah. Gents, knowing the goalie rotation has gone this way the entire way, what do you think changes that strategy at any point now?
Well, I actually asked Ryan Oska about the goaltenders and rotation, which based on what we saw at the morning skate at T-Mobile Arena today, looked like it was going to continue. So I basically threw it at the Flames head coach and said, is this a scenario where if it ain't broke, don't fix it? I think we'd all agree that the Flames goaltending 8 games into the season has been fantastic. It's not been a question mark like we thought it was going to be. It's been a strength like I'm not sure many people thought that it would be. So basically he said, with the way the schedule has played out to this point and the way it's laid out in the not so distant future, he's not sure that it's going to stop the rotation. But what could stop it? I would say a couple of things. Number one, if one of the two goaltenders has a really tough night, and let's be honest, guys, with the way the Golden Knights are scoring goals right now, could it be a tough night for Dan Vladar at T-Mobile Arena tonight? Yeah, it could be. But then again, I think they were going to probably go to Dustin Wolf on Wednesday at Delta Center anyway. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But if a guy has a really tough night, then maybe the other guy gets a couple of starts or multiple starts in a row. Or if one of these goaltender pitches a shutout or has a really strong performance. I'm not sure if, you know, a strong performance from Vladar against the Golden Knights tonight would lead to another start for him on Wednesday night, but maybe it would. So, but both guys have played at a really high level. Until that changes, I'm not sure anything else has to change.
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, the way I would see it changing, you know, the only reason that I could see going away from what's essentially just been a back and forth ping pong is if one of the guys falters. If and that's probably not just one bad game. That's if one guy starts to have a couple bad ones in a row. I think as long as both of them are going as well as they are, and just to sort of reiterate what Wilsey said, I mean, both Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf have been really good stories for the Calgary Flames this year. I think as long as they both maintain their performance at the level it's at, you're not going away from this rotation. It's working for your team. You know, you have a good record. It's working for both goaltenders. And I do think workload management is important when you're talking about a guy who's coming off hip surgery in Vladar and a guy who's never had a number one or even close to number one workload at the NHL level. Like there's a reason that you want to manage the workload for both guys. And I think as well at the sort of stage, if that's the right way to put it, that they're at in their respective careers, practice time is really important too. You know, I know because of the youth movement that the Calgary Flames are going through and because Dustin Wolf has been the goalie of the future and has certainly looked in 4 games so far this season every bit the goalie of the future that Flames fans want him to be and expect him to be. I know there's a sentiment out there, well, hey, Dustin Wolf has shown he should be a number one guy. Let's get him 50 starts. Let's get him 55. Let's get him 60. Well, practice time is still going to be really helpful for Dustin Wolf at this stage in his career. And I just think as long as the rotation is working, as long as the idea of bouncing back and forth from one to the other is working, as long as neither guy falters, I'd stick with it.
So I see no reason to make a change. Let me just throw a couple of stats at you. After Saturday's game, the Flames sit 8th overall for team save percentage at .908. So they are the 8th best team in the NHL for team save percentage. And here's the one that really jumps out, guys. They are number one overall when it comes to 5-on-5 save percentage. At 5-on-5, Calgary's save percentage is 951, which is considerably better than the second best team, the New York Rangers. So the Flames boast the number one 5-on-5 save percentage in the NHL and the number eight overall save percentage in the NHL. Pretty impressive numbers. And you've got a formula that has led to that through eight games so far. So I'm not eager to make that change. Here are the things that I think could change it. Number one, I still wonder about what happens if when one of these two guys posts a shutout, because traditionally a lot of coaches will be like, ah, guy gets a shutout, can't go away from him now. That's kind of been one of those not always held to, but you know, it's been sort of an unwritten rule in the NHL for quite some time. When you're rolling a tandem, even if you're not rolling a tandem, guy gets a shutout, a lot of times the coach will go back to him. So I wonder about that. But outside of that, I do wonder when this schedule does start to gear down a little bit, like into the, what, it would be the third week of November when they have a little bit of a quieter schedule. I think they play a Tuesday back-to-back. So they go Monday, Tuesday, home road, then don't play again until Friday. And what if at that point, you know, you've got a little more body of work, little more evidence that one is outplaying the other. And you're like, you know what? We think goalie A has been slightly better than goalie B, and that guy played on Tuesday and gave us a really good chance. Let's go back to him on Friday. I wonder if that would be the other time, to your point, Willsie, when you asked Coach Huska about it on Monday morning, about like when that might change, because they are heavy essentially every second night until that time, when maybe things gear down a little bit and the schedule gives them a little bit of time to breathe. I also wonder if that's when, if the reasoning is there, maybe that might be when they decide to make a change. So shutout and then into spots where it maybe becomes a little bit less of a, you know, drinking from a fire hose schedule, which the Flames are definitely in the midst of right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's so much different than it was or would have been if Jacob Markstrom was still around and healthy, because you know he wants to start every night and would be pushing to start 60-plus games a season, and that wouldn't leave a lot of games for the other guy. But, you know, assuming they both stay healthy, I kind of envision this season as like a 45-37 split. And maybe it'll be even tighter than that. I mean, we're going to be nine games in, and it's going to be five for Dan Vladar and four for Dustin Wolf. So, you know, it's been a 50-50 split to this point. So I'm not sure I could see one guy getting even 55 starts if the other guy is healthy. So we'll see how it plays out. But hey, as I asked Ryan Huska this morning, is this about if it ain't broke, don't fix it? And you know, he kind of said yes, and yeah, and also talked about the schedule, which we've discussed. But, you know, the Flames goaltending, to the surprise of many, including this guy, has been, I think, the backbone of the team this season. It has been, if not the biggest strength, certainly one of the biggest strengths. Eight games in, I would say eight solid performances by Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't see that coming.
Yep, I would say eight quality starts. It's hard to pinpoint one that you're like, absolutely, that goal can't go in on either of them so far. So I'm with you. Eight quality starts in eight opportunities for the Flames and these two goalies, and anticipating Dan Vladar to get start number five Monday night in Las Vegas. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Oh, and just one other point. And I know it's early, and I think it's early both from a, you know, positive standpoint for Calgary in that, yeah, are they going to be the number one 5-on-5 save percentage team all year long? I guess we'll wait and see. But, you know, we are talking about guys, neither of them have taken on the workload that they're taking on so far in their NHL careers. And I'm curious as to how the goaltending story evolves as we move into the final 9/10 of the season. The other thing is on the it's early front, Jacob Markstrom was brought in to solidify things in New Jersey. Had a great start in Europe, but New Jersey sits 20th overall in goaltending with an .884 team save percentage. Jacob, while he sits 4-3-1, he sits at an .895 save percentage. It's early on both fronts, but I did want to point that out as things go along as well. Guys, second Daily Flames Roundtable, Willsie, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Monday. Yegor Sharangovich returned to the lineup on Saturday against Winnipeg and got put right back on the left side of the Kadri line, which we were interested to see where that was going to go. Did he get slotted in at center, or did they put him in there and right back onto power play one? What do we make of Sharon Govich as Saturday played itself out?
You know, for a guy who didn't play in the first seven games of the season and who was playing against the best team in the league to this point in the season, thought he looked pretty good on Saturday night. Played almost 20 minutes, 19 minutes and 23 seconds. Didn't have any shots on goal, which is something he has to change because his shot is probably his greatest weapon. But he did have five shot attempts, so it's not like he wasn't trying to get the puck to his opponent's net. Spent a ton of time back on that first power play unit. You know, they talked a lot about the power play and how it improved at the end of last season and how excited they were to use that same group of five guys to start this season. And then, of course, one of them, Yegor Sharangovich, gets hurt late in the final preseason game, and they have to break that unit up. And the power play got off to a great start, but has been slumping. So you get him back, and you hope he can help it out. And I don't think it's a coincidence, fellas, that he had more power play time than any Flames player in that game against the Jets. He played 5 minutes and 57 seconds on the power play. And unfortunately, he didn't help the Flames enough with the man advantage because they just didn't do very well in that special teams battle. And that's the biggest reason why they lost that game against the Jets. But all in all, for a guy who was rested, obviously, but I thought a little rusted as well, I thought he played pretty well. And the fact that he played almost 20 minutes suggests to me that the coaches probably saw it the same way.
And I know Ryan Huska told us Saturday night, shortly after the game, you know, expect to see him back in the penalty killing rotation sort of right away here. I think you're going to see Yegor Sharangovich, who formed such a great penalty killing tandem last season with Blake Coleman for the most part. I don't know if they go back to that or if they leave Coleman with Backlund, but I think you're going to see Yegor Sharangovich's ice time only increase. Wilsey, you said he looked a little rusted, rested and rusted. I would say there were certainly hints of that. There were times that probably could have gotten one of those shot attempts or could have got one through that didn't work out. The one that really sticks out for me was the sort of uncharacteristic bobble on the power play where the pass sort of pops off his stick and suddenly it's going 200 feet the other direction. But just a really significant, and this is Mr. Obvious speaking, but this is a really significant addition back for the Calgary Flames. This is a guy who is going to add some speed and some defensive conscience to that top line. That's going to make that trio better. He's a guy who is going to help the power play. We know, he has the best shot on the team. I don't think anyone would argue that, or certainly I would argue that he has the best shot on the team. He's going to help on the penalty kill. Like this, whenever you hear week to week, and maybe this is just me, but whenever I hear week to week, I sort of fear the worst. And to get Yegor Sharangovich back at this point in the season, it's going to mean a lot for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think long term, I mean, I think he's going to be just fine. And I think you saw some of the things that you like to see with Sharangovich, even at times as that game went along. Like, I was very happy to see him back on the number one power play unit. I wasn't sure if they were going to throw him right back in from the get-go or maybe ease that along and keep Zeri there. But, just even as I was watching, and I thought Calgary's power play got worse as the night went along, but in the first period,
it was not pretty to watch the other night.
No, the only one that I was like, okay, was the first one. And I was like, geez, even the look of it with 17 back on it, you're like, okay, now they've got another trigger man. Like, you've got Nas, who can be deadly in the bumper role. You've got Kuzmenko, who, when he does decide to fire it, is pretty deadly. You've got Uyghur, who gets everything to the net. And now you've got the true trigger man in Sharangovich. And so seeing him back there, it just felt like there's more potential for it to be a dangerous unit. Now, it didn't necessarily turn out that way. And I remember exactly the bobble you're talking about, Wes, because I noted that in my brain too. I thought at 5-on-5, the most promising thing is that he didn't look like he was coming off an injury. Like, he didn't look like he was skating gingerly, didn't look like he was having to get back up to speed in terms of the pace of the game. Now it's just timing with the hands and that type of stuff that comes back pretty quickly for the best athletes in the world. So I'm not worried about it. I thought he got better even as the game went along and became more noticeable as the game went along. And guys, the most interesting thing to me was the decision they were going to make in terms of where Sharon Govich plays. Wilsey, we talked about that even on Thursday's postgame and Friday's roundtable is, okay, if Sharon Govich returns, what do? Do you pop him in the middle? And, you know, just because Pospisil played so well that night with Kadri and Kuzmenko against Carolina, do you just leave Pospisil there and put Sharon Govich into the middle with Huberdeau and Mantha? Or do you go with the three lines that Ryan Huska constructed and built out over the offseason that we hadn't yet got to see during the regular season? Remember, we started training camp with Pospisil between Huberdeau and Mantha, Sharon Govich with Kadri and Kuzmenko, and obviously Zeri on the backline line with Coleman. Those were the three lines they started training camp with. Those are the lines that were the most consistent throughout practice during training camp, and those are the lines they were going with towards the end of the preseason prior to Sharon Govich getting hurt. So I guess when I saw the lines on Saturday night, I wasn't surprised. As soon as I thought about, oh yeah, those are the lines that Ryan Huska was so excited about and Craig Conroy was so excited about coming into the season, and you haven't got a chance to use them yet. Doesn't mean that they stay that way. Doesn't mean that you can't tweak them. We've already seen Pospisil moved away from center ice once, but I guess Wilsey, I guess Mr. Huska was correct when he was asked on Thursday prior to that game if the Martin Pospisil center ice experiment was over, and he said absolutely not, because one game later he was back down the middle and looks like that's where he'll be again on Monday night.
Yeah, at least to start. I do wonder how long that leash is. Mm-hmm. I wonder how long his leash is, period. I mean, benched a couple of games ago in the back half of the second period, takes that bad penalty in the third period on Saturday night, and he's got to find that fine line between playing an aggressive brand of hockey, and that's when he's at his best, but not being so aggressive that he takes bad penalties, because there have been too many of those and the Flames haven't been able to kill enough of them off. So Martin Pospisil is a guy who looks like he's trying to find himself a little bit right now. So I do wonder if he'll be at center for the long term, or if maybe they move him back to the wing. And maybe they thought with Yegor Sharangovich playing for the first time in 8 games to start the season that it would be a bit too much for him responsibility wise to play down the middle. So maybe that'll just ease his way in playing in the wing for a game or two and then go from there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, he gives you a great shot. Wes, you talked about how explosive that shot is and how it's probably the best shot on the team. But, you know, he's also a good 200-foot player. It's not just all offense with him. So when you look at how the lines are put together, you put him in a line with Nazem Kadri, who's a good 200-foot player, and Andrei Kuzmenko, who I do think is better defensively than he was, but he's not great. So Sharon Govich is a responsible winger who can certainly play that role. So I do kind of like how the lines look on paper right now. And if Pospisil can find his game again, then hopefully he gets more and more comfortable centering that line with Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha. And the Flames have some balanced lines and some lines that can score. And they're probably going to need a little bit, maybe even a lot of both against this Golden Knights team tonight.
You know, the thing I'd add too, and it goes to what you were just talking about, is having Yegor Sharangovich back gives you another option for a guy who can pinch hit. Thank you, Pat. At center in a top
World
nine.
I'm a big baseball guy. Yeah. World Series. I know all about pinch hitting.
If you need to move Martin Pospisil out of that center job for whatever reason, whether, you know, it's discipline, whether you just don't like the way he's going, I mean, you could now switch Sharon Govich and Pospisil just in the spots they're in. Disrespect to Justin Kirkland, who remains one of the NHL's best stories. No disrespect to Kevin Rooney, but if you're looking for a guy who can then fill in as a top nine center, Sharon Govich gives you another option. We know faceoffs have been a mighty struggle sort of throughout the Flames lineup, but as they continue to look for solutions at center, here's another guy who might be able to help.
Yep. Thank you, Wilsey. We will do it all over again on Tuesday. Appreciate it, my man.
Okay, guys, enjoy the game tonight.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's our Daily Flames Roundtable. I just wanted to wrap up the hour with a quick note as the Calgary Flames family lost a family member over the last few days as former equipment manager Gus Thorson passed away over the last couple of days. We found out officially on Monday morning. When I first started on the beat, you know, as a quick math punk 25-year-old idiot, had no idea what I was doing, and here I am getting the opportunity, the privilege to take over for Rob Kerr doing the overtime call-in show and getting the privilege to be at every Flames home game and a part of every Flames broadcast and sitting beside Rob and Mike Rogers and Peter Marr. And, you know, you're just like, you feel very out of place. And I just, there were two human beings that went out of their way to immediately make me feel welcome on the beat. One of them was Alex Tanguy, which I will never, ever forget. And the same thing is true with Gus Thorson, who was the equipment manager at the time. You'd always see him in the equipment room. And you know, whenever he'd see me in the locker room, he'd always come up and say hi to me and talk about what he heard on the show and some of the silly calls that I'd gotten or whatever the case may be. And it meant the world to me, because we're talking about, especially at the time, you're like, oh, that guy's part of the Calgary Flames. And I felt very out of place, regardless of, you know, the way it may have come off. I felt very, very out of place and uncomfortable covering the NHL and getting the opportunity I was doing at the time. And so a guy like Gus going out of his way, I don't know if he felt that or what, but going out of his way to be that kind and that welcoming, I never ever forgot it. So after Gus's time with the Flames ended and he opened up the skate shop at Windsport, any time that I'd see him, it was always so awesome to just catch up with Gus in his little shop. And that turned out to be such a successful venture as well. My buddy Justin works at that shop as well. I know he is absolutely rocked by this news, as are the Flames family. Was talking to Kelly Rudy today and Ryan Vardy over at TSN. And just it was a real sudden thing.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, rest easy to Gus. I know you are, but if he's listening right now from wherever he is, I hope he knows the type of impact he made on so many people. Just such an unbelievably friendly, nice guy who never felt like he was in the end. Like, he never felt like he was an NHL equipment manager. Just felt like he was a good human being who just happened to have that job. Condolences to the family, mm-hmm. condolences to friends and everybody close to Gus. And I just wanted to make sure I said that because the man meant a lot to me personally. And so I was pretty rocked by that news this morning. So rest easy, Gus. We're all thinking about you, Jerry. And hopefully even just a little bit of those good healing vibes towards the family can go a little way. So
yeah.
Flames Radio and the Flames Talk Sportsnet 960 family, we're thinking about the Thorson family.
I had an opportunity when I was a journalism student at Mount Royal College, then university now. We had a photography assignment, which was to do a day in the life of somebody, you know, pick a person and do a day in the life photos of them. And you know, being such a sports geek, I wanted to figure out something sports related, Flames related, and ultimately spent a day with Gus Thorson taking photos of him. It was right after the Flames, as it turns out, had traded for a goaltender named Mika Kiprusoff. So spent the day at the Saddle Dome. I was a student that Gus wouldn't have known from a hole in the wall, and he could not have been nicer to me, could not have made me feel more welcome, similar to you, except that I was just there for a few hours, and he really did treat me like gold. It was always great to see him at Breakaway Sports there, yeah. At Winsport. You know, this is one that leaves the Flames family reeling for sure, you know, just as the hockey world was over the weekend with the passing of Bill Hay. Well, you know, another one that we send our condolences to the family, but, you know, especially in Gus's case, this is someone that so many parents of minor hockey players got to know over the years because he was a fixture there at Winsport. And so, you know, I guess kind of tying the two together now, you know, two men who have had a tremendous impact on hockey in Gus's case in this city, in Bill Hayes' case, you know, throughout Canada and even beyond. And so, yeah, condolences to both families. We're thinking of you.
100%. Well said. That'll wrap us up this hour. Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Shan and Cam are producers this hour. And by the way, the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.